Mic check.
No warm-ups today, huh?
Yeah, no warm-ups today at all.
You guys just kind of like
We just went and came out of the air.
You just kind of scooted in and we just jumped on the mics today.
Yeah, hey everybody, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I am Karma.
And Will's man in the boards and in the chat room. So, yeah, we just walked in, 20 minutes ago, from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And where we met up with the Indiana Ghost Trackers, Sean Burris and the folks from Fort Wayne. Not Fort Wayne. We drove through Fort Wayne. we Terre Haute. Valparaiso's north. Vincennes chapter.
Bloomington
chapter.
Evansville
chapter. So, yeah, we went on a little training and ghost hunt mission with them.
It's ironic that you guys went this weekend because I was the one that kind of threw the idea out to go. And then I didn't even end up going.
That's kind of ironic, yeah. Well, I did sort of mention that in my sunshine stage.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that already.
Happy. Yeah. But what happened was I was the one when Sean mentioned it last week.
Yeah.
I was the one who said, oh, no, absolutely not. I'm going to see Tone and Niche.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll flip a coin, and whoever wins, that's what I'm doing. Excuse me. Well, what happened was, it turns out Tone and Niche are playing not yesterday, Saturday, and this upcoming Saturday, but this upcoming Friday and Saturday is when Tone and Niche are playing. Tone and Niche, of course, are the ones who did, you know, Cruising Through the Graveyard.
Yeah,
and
they were on the show
a couple months ago, and...
Great couple of characters, right?
Absolutely
there.
Fantastic musicians.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
And so I was going to go see them.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out they're playing this Friday and Saturday night, not last Saturday and this upcoming Saturday, but this upcoming Friday and Saturday. So I'm going to be going to see them this Saturday.
So you call me up. What was it? I was sick all week again. I mean,
Thursday
I finally
Friday.
Kicked it today. I finally have a voice again. I can talk.
Cool.
I actually went to the doctor's on Thursday. You'll laugh hysterically about this. He grabbed my throat. You know how they check your throat and all that stuff? Does this hurt? Right? He grabbed my throat. He's like, my God, your tonsils are the size of a Buick.
Wow.
I had some massives. It was just something totally bad. That's why I couldn't talk and stuff. I was losing my voice every day.
Wow.
So he gave me the Amoxil. And that's what, you know, you called me up, like, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, I'll tell you what, I think I should take one more weekend. I've done this 3 weekends in a row. November was absolutely completely unproductive because the weekends I was just laid back trying to get well. And the Amoxil kicked in, so I think I'm healthy again. We'll have to see tomorrow when I wake up. But the man took me down also, and I ended up having to work yesterday because you called me on, what was it? Did you call me Thursday or Friday night?
Well, we talked Friday.
Sean,
Thursday
you conferenced Sean in.
I conferenced Sean.
Like,
that was
great.
That was Friday night. Yeah.
And I'm like, I gotta work. I have to go into work. I can't.
And you had mentioned it to me on IMs earlier in the day, but I just didn't.
Yeah.
Put it together, and I'm like, are you going? Didn't I tell you I had to work? I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't mean you can't go. And well, it turns out you had to work.
Yeah, I would have liked nothing better, but I wanted to just take some more money from the people that I don't like anymore.
Yet another, I don't blame you, yet another trip to Indiana that you missed. And
I know.
I'm telling you.
It's going to happen sooner or later.
Every time I go, I never cease to be amazed at the Indiana Ghost Trackers.
Yeah.
I want them, I so got to get them to somehow spread into Michigan or something because they are so organized.
Very organized.
They are, yeah, I agree.
I was very impressed.
I was extremely impressed. And they were doing a training session and practice ghost hunt. It was just absolutely smooth. It was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. Sean is just a bundle of energy. And we also went back to Edna C. Collins.
You guys went there, huh?
Uh-huh. We went back to Edna C. Collins. We went to Spooklight Hill.
Yeah.
Do you remember? You weren't there. Never mind. Will remembers, and
shut
so does
up.
Bonnie. No, Bonnie... Yeah, Bonnie remembers where we tried to get there. We tried to do the Spooklight Hill thing with Scott K. And so Scott K, Bonnie, me, and yeah, you were there. You
there
were in Scott
trip.
K.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know what it is? When we got to the road, we turned right, and there's 2 hills, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's described everywhere as being 3 hills.
Yeah, I remember that. We were in. Yeah,
we had the
truck come over the hill instead of a
spooklight. Yeah, it turns out it's the you turn left instead of right.
And that's right around the same time where we got totally lost back in the Hills.
And we found
one of Hills' gates.
And that was the right one.
That was the
correct. That was the one. That was the main one.
Really?
That we found, yeah.
Well, that don't surprise me because, well, the pictures are on the website if you want to see it from the Indiana trip. From when we were at Hell's Gates, actually, and the pictures are just staggering. Not
in
any paranormal standards, but my God, I mean, the thing about that tunnel, that gate, whatever you want to call it, is that you're in the middle of the country. You're like out in the middle of the country. You have farms, trailers, and hot rods. Basically, that's all that's out there. But the majority of it's like just green land, woods, just people growing stuff, right? And out of nowhere, when we were driving around, for example, that night. We came around the corner, and out of nowhere, there's just this completely spray paint ridden tunnel.
Right, reminiscent of Detroit. Totally,
completely reminiscent of Detroit. But it was in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
It was just so weird, and it made no sense. But yeah, it's kind of a cool place just to go to, if you ask me. I mean, the place really gave me the heebie-jeebies. You guys know that. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't like the sounds around here.
That was the right one.
You know, and we're like, who's gonna get out?
And Bonnie got out. Yeah, she walked through Hell's Gate.
She walked through
by herself.
Yeah.
With us following safely in the car, yeah.
So did you guys, as far as the Edna C. Collins Bridge is concerned...
We have no idea. We took EV, we
took some recordings?
You know, we did recordings,
okay.
But we didn't have...
kind of review it or anything?
Yeah, we just got in 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, okay.
One lady took a picture of Will, and he had that shadow behind him. That was the only thing that we found out
that's
that
true.
Night.
A shadow and mist.
Yep.
Okay.
Behind him, so there was stuff.
We got to get correct.
When I was cold.
Right,
yeah.
When he got a chill go through him.
Oh.
Of course, I think I was frostbitten by that time.
I
wouldn't be able to feel a chill if the ghost walked right through me, you know. It was freezing. At least Edna C. Collins is a covered bridge, so there wasn't
the wind blasting at you.
Right.
No, it felt like the wind was going through the tunnel.
Well, it could, but it was definitely a lot
for me,
less
anyways.
Than when you're not in a covered bridge.
Well, when you have a bridge like that...
We were standing out at Spooklight Hill...
Because it was open field. Well,
open,
on the one side, it was open field, so...
It just blasted right at you all the time.
Well, if the wind was to start blowing through that bridge, it would kill you, because enclosed areas like that...
Will amplify the wind?
Absolutely. It's like a wind tunnel. But my favorite place to go for wind to gust around and blow you around is Wayne State University here in
Detroit. Oh, yeah.
I speak from experience, because all those buildings standing up all around, all in one little square mile, if it's a windy day, you'll literally get pushed... around that campus.
Oh, yeah.
It's ridiculous down there. So the same thing would go with a bridge like that. Thank God the wind was probably blowing on the bridge and not through it. That's why you guys didn't get killed.
Thank heaven. It was cold, though. It was really cold. It was a cold, clear night. Now, one of the things that I've always wanted to do, and I have to say, first of all, thank you so much to the Indiana Ghost Trekkers.
Mm-hmm.
They're indianaghosts.org. And they're linked up on our website.
Yeah.
And they are...
A good group of
they're
people.
They're a fantastic group of people. And I'm telling you, we had a lot of fun. We learned stuff. We ghost hunted. It was just an amazing overnight trip.
Yeah, you guys went overnight, too.
Yeah, it was very overnight.
You called me yesterday, and you're like, okay, we're just getting into Terre Haute right now. I'm like, it's... 6 at night.
Right.
What are you guys going to do?
But it worked out really, really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it worked out really well. So we had, you know, the meeting stuff. And I have to say thank you, Indiana Ghost Trekkers.
Thank you.
What would that be, the Southwest region? absolutely, absolutely incredible time. And what's really interesting is one of the things I've always wanted to do is see a ghost light.
Yeah.
I had gone to Houston, and we went out to Bragg Road.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and I went to Bragg Road in Houston to try and see the ghost light. Didn't see it. But I did get to speak with the Hardin County Sheriff out there and talk with him for a while. Then our whole trip to Indiana, the first one that you did go on, and we met up with Scott Kay.
Yeah.
On that trip, that was going to be a trip to Rensselaer.
Mm-hmm.
And in Rensselaer, Indiana, there's a thing called Moody's Light.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted to see. Well, it ended up being a trip to Terre Haute. I don't know how, but when I planned it, it all ended up being a trip to Terre Haute.
Yeah.
And, of course, since then, you know, never looked back. I've wanted to go. It's an 11-hour drive to drive to the Paulding Light here in Michigan.
Yeah, it's...
So you're talking, yeah, it's still in Michigan, but it's 11-hour drive to get there.
That just illustrates the size of the state.
Yeah, this state is one huge, long state. Mm. You have to go all the way up and then all the way west, you know, all the way north, all the way west to get to Rensselaer, or I'm sorry, to Paulding, the Paulding Light. And but so I've just never gone there. I mean, that's just a really, really long drive.
That's
a, so I've never gone there, but the but I've wanted to see a ghost light.
Mm.
Well, the area of Brazil and, you know, what is it, Cloverdale or something? I don't remember, but that area there has this spook light hill. And I'm like, well, does it work? And Sean says, yeah, it works. I saw it. And I'm like, well, can we go? So we went to that first after the investigation, the practice investigation at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Spook Light Hill. And we had turned the wrong way when we went from the internet directions, right? And
I'm fired. Sorry.
Good job. Who's calling you between 7 and 9?
You want to find out? Never mind. It's somebody I have to talk to about business.
Oh, okay.
It's private.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. But the what happens is the... We had turned right instead of left. Well, it turns out you really do go there, and you flash your lights three times, and sure enough, this light happens.
Yeah.
It's a red... Well, last night, it was a red dot, much like a laser pointer, or like when you do one of those temperature gauge meter things.
Yeah.
It's a red dot, and it bounces up and down, you know, on this... in this valley of this, you know, where these hills are.
Yeah.
In the road. And there was that, plus there was this, I think, unexplainable bright white light as well. And people are like, oh no, that's cars. Well, we measured it. It was we were 1 mile from the nearest usable intersection. There's an intersection really close to there, but the bridge is out, so it's a closed intersection. So nobody was going through that road. The next usable road is 1 mile away.
Strange.
I know a lot of the people that went out there, they end up seeing it. And I remember you were trying to say, it's over there, don't you see it? And I was just so cold and tired. And I was aching. I couldn't focus. I couldn't see it if I really wanted to.
Right. You could probably walk up to you and you'd be like, eh. Because we were all tired and cold. And and you were aching because you've got other... issues
ailment.
As well, ailments. So, I mean, it was just, but it was amazing. I did see that there were some locals there as well, some kids who had just, like, driven by.
Did they pee right in front of you?
No, but the one guy, he was chewing tobacco, and he spit and almost got me right on the shoe. He was like...
Ew!
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that's very inconsiderate.
But it was dark, too, so...
Yeah. But so what happens is they had said that, you know, one of them had said that sometimes it's green, this light, sometimes it's blue, sometimes it's yellow. It's different colors. Last night it happened to be red.
Well, it is Christmas, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's just like a festive spirit, apparently.
So, but I did see two unexplainable bright white lights that could not have been a car, no matter what. I mean, people are like, oh, that's just cars from the road. The road's a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
This was at the next hill.
Mm.
So there's no way I was overestimating.
This is down in a valley, kind of, you said? Did you guys walk down there?
Will and a bunch of them did, yes.
What
I did.
Down there? What would be interesting
trees?
To do is... Yeah, well, what would be interesting to do with something like that is go down there with a flashlight.
Swamp.
Well, they had flashlights.
And were they popping them off when they were down there?
Well, they would turn them on sometimes, but what happened is the light was still there.
Wow.
The light was bouncing around them.
Even when they were walking towards it, I know you guys were saying that you had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like they weren't quite yet to the point of reference or where it was coming from. So.
Yeah, it was... so they couldn't catch up to it, but it definitely happened. I mean, it happened while they were down there. And that's one of the things they say about Paulding Light.
Yeah.
If you actually crawl through the brush and you know, get to where the Paulding Light is appearing, they say that you cannot see it, but other people can see it all around you.
I remember you telling me that because I thought it was kind of neat.
And I thought that was totally, yeah. I
that
think
you go
totally
all the way
weird.
Down there and you think you're going to find it, kind of like the pot of gold at the end
right.
of the rainbow. And then people are up on the high point of it looking down at you, and it's
and
like you're engulfed in it.
Yeah, and they're trying to take photos and stuff. Of course, you can't take a photo of a ghost light. It's very difficult. You'd have to take video and then transfer it to a photo.
Yeah.
Because
really, I didn't know that.
Well, it would flash.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And the flash
sense.
Only goes so many meters. So, yeah, it just wouldn't work. And it's too little light for any you know, average camera. You'd have to have, like, photography equipment, you know, to leave the thing on. But see, the thing bounces. So even if you adjust the shutter speed to capture that much film, no, you'd have to do video of it.
Yeah, that'd be the only way to pick that up.
Right, in order to take that.
Now, you said this thing bounces around, too?
It bounces around just like a laser pointer. If you held a laser pointer and it's pointing at the end of the room,
does it bounce like a little dot on the board?
I was just
it's all random.
That,
it's all random.
Fish heads, eat them up. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but no.
It's squiggly.
It's just all over the place, just like you're holding a laser pointer. So one of the things I kept saying was, no, it's not, who's doing temperature readings? That's all that is, you know.
Yeah.
And nobody confessed to doing temperature readings. So that, you know, they all said that they weren't doing temperature because that's the same red light.
Pointer on it, yeah.
And then the local kid had said no, that it's sometimes it's green, sometimes
and
it's a different color.
He even did a report on it. He said
yes,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said it was basically it's like almost any given night you
right.
can see it.
And it's definitely there. It's definitely there. Mm-hmm. And then those white flash lights, the white ones are very brief, but they're very large.
They just pop up, or
they come from the left going toward the right, as if it were a car driving down that closed intersection.
Yeah,
but they happen so fast, the car would have to be going like 100 miles an hour, and the intersection is closed.
Oh, okay.
And you're a mile from the next usable intersection. So maybe those were UFOs. I don't know.
Now,
or maybe it was the ghost light.
Is there any houses like
there's
a little bit off
couple,
of the road
but
there?
No, not near there that I could detect.
Oh.
I mean, there's a couple, but they're more up toward the main road, the one that's a mile away.
So there's nothing really close down
nothing
there.
Nothing that I saw.
Where the bridge is out. Yeah,
I'd have to go there in the daylight to detect like where.
Map it out.
Yeah, where the major houses are near there and
yeah.
stuff. But very interesting. I've always, always wanted to see a ghost light. Now I've seen a ghost light. So I'm really, really excited about that.
Cross off your goal list.
Yeah.
Right.
Ghost light.
Done.
Check.
Did that.
Spot. Well, coming up,
yeah.
we're going to get to talk to, speaking of goal lists, we're going to get to talk to Lauren Coleman.
Yeah. Now, you called this one in about 2 months ago. You called me
yeah.
on this.
Yeah.
I was on a date.
Yes.
I was on a date, and the phone rings, and I'm like, Doug. Well, if Doug calls at this time of night, it's got to be something very important, so I picked the phone up. And I must have, it was hysterical, because I'm on this date, and I'm trying to be Mr. Normal for a change. and the phone rings, and it's Doug, and it's like, we got Lauren Coleman. I'm like, we got Lauren Coleman? And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, sweet. So we get into this conversation.
And your date's like hanging.
Yeah, so I ended up dropping her off after that, you know. But, you know, the end justifies the means because he's here. He's gonna be on here in a couple of minutes.
Lauren Coleman, and another of my goals is to go out. I don't know if you'll ever get to actually see one, but one of my goals is to see or go searching for a Bigfoot. Actually, I'd like to ask him.
We got one down here.
Are you
talking about?
Yeah, that's true. We have Yeti here, but no, we've got. I'd like to go searching for a Bigfoot. I saw an actual like show
mm-hmm.
once, and I called Will, and I'm like, Will, we got to go to where was it? Like Oklahoma or somewhere? It was somewhere really.
We'll be
weird.
Right there.
And search for a Bigfoot. But we have to ask Lauren if it's Bigfoot or Big Feet. Because I just really don't know.
Well, I'm sure. I don't think it's going to be something walking around like one regular size foot and like one gigantic, like 2 foot long foot.
No.
Walks with a massive limp or something.
No, I mean, like, if you have one of them, it's a Bigfoot. If you have two of them.
Big feet.
Is it big feet? Is it a couple of big feet?
Big foot eye.
Foot eye.
I don't know how you would say that in plural.
Or big foot.
I think in that situation, if you want to get into grammar, I think they would have to be Bigfoots.
Because it's a proper noun,
mm-hmm.
and because it is a capital B, usually.
Thank you, Professor
Sonic. So you've got a proper noun of Bigfoot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you're supposed to change the proper noun.
You guys brought me on for that, and that only. We just want to know what the proper...
Yeah,
pronunciation would be for multiple big feet,
Bigfoot entities.
You meant one.
If you
just
see a
one,
group,
a
what
point.
Is a group? A group of geese is a gaggle, right?
Yeah.
A group of
a crows is a group of murder.
A group of children is just scary. Stay away. especially if you happen to be in the McDonald's playland.
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
quickly.
Like I said, a group of crows is a murder, right?
Yes, a murder of crows.
Okay, murder.
So, what is a group of Bigfoot?
Well, it'd be nice. I don't think people think too much about that.
Will's family reunion. I'm kidding, Will.
I don't think people think about that too much. It seems hard enough to find one in the first place. If you find like multiple big
then invent the language.
Yeah,
right.
You're going to have it'll call for it then. But
right.
It seems hard enough to find one alone.
Right.
This creature seems so elusive. There are the videos. I'm sure anybody that listened to this show has seen the ominous video that they've actually done test upon test on, to the point where they actually ran a radiation test on it, where they actually sent the film out and had it sent negative and mm-hmm. to watch this thing walk. And it's an eerie video. It's been played all over.
The guy who filmed it on his deathbed said mm-hmm. that it was faked.
Yeah.
But there's
it's still
other
a very
saying,
interesting video.
No, it's
yeah,
not.
It's always
you know.
Been a subject of argument concerning Bigfoot
right.
in general. And we'll probably get into. I'm hoping to talk about Nessie some too. I want to talk about I want to talk about Frankenfish too.
Frankenfish? Well, gosh, you mean that sci-fi thing?
That had to be the most ridiculous thing I ever saw in my entire life.
It was
life.
The worst movie ever on the planet. Did you watch it when we were at the Bates?
Yeah, when we were at Bates, and
That was the worst movie the worst movie.
Well, the best part about the film is that they thought there was just one. And the woman... Now, for those of you who don't know...
See? And if you could do it, you could do Frankenfish. So if the movie was named Frankenfish, you would have known right at the beginning.
Well, the scene, the best part of this film... Because you gotta remember, we were out ghost hunting all night long.
Frankenfishes?
It's like 3 in the morning, and we come down, we try to warm up in the house, and the TV's on. So I look at the TV set, and I see this thing that keeps popping. They're like on these docks in New Orleans or something.
In the bayou or something.
In the bayou,
yeah.
And these people are standing on a dock, and all of a sudden this thing would just jump out of the water on the dock, grab somebody with its mouth, drag it back down into the water, right?
Right.
Like, that's pretty cool. Okay, cool. And... The one guy, the thing jumps up on the dock, and he has a shotgun, and he blows the thing's head off. I mean, literally, like fish guts go everywhere, right?
Right.
And I'm like, well, oh, yeah, he killed the fish, yay. He decides to take it one step further, and there's these other people standing on another dock, and this guy gets a big honking, like, you know, Indiana Jones or, you know, whatever, a Crocodile Dundee knife, and cuts this freaking fish open, right? And, I mean, the way that prop was set up, it had to have been about a 6-foot-long fish, but it must have weighed about 300 pounds. It was huge, right? The guy cuts into this fish, puts his hand up in the fish. Now, I've gutted fish before, and I find it pretty gross, but I've done it. I mean, little fish.
Right.
You know,
not frankenfish. Yeah.
Not frankenfish, right? Puts his arm up in this thing and pulls its heart out, right? And he takes the heart, and he's all like, and he walks over to the grill and fires his grill up and throws the heart on the grill and starts dumping wine on it, right? And meanwhile, the people on the other dock are like, they have the look of like just this horror on their face, and the guy starts eating the heart right in front of them, right? And then another frankenfish pops out of the water and eats him. Apparently, it was his mate or something like that.
Really, really, really.
I do want to ask you if there have been. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's kind of funny. Havoc, one of our listeners, Havoc, who we got to meet down in West Virginia, put up an article this week on the site.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking full advantage of the news article feature on the site.
Thank heaven somebody is.
And there's a new species.
Some of them are fascinating.
They are. There was a new species of dinosaur discovered this. Well, I think it was like last week in Brazil. And I believe it was Brazil. I read through the article kind of quick. But there's been a new species of dinosaur discovered. And these things are popping up all the time. There's all
right.
kinds of new things.
They just learned again that humans roamed North America
mm-hmm.
long, long, long before, the use of the Bering Strait.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the 10,000 years or something unheard of before. That was in Google News last week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're learning all this stuff about,
ancient history, as you could call it.
And cryptozoology has some ties into all that stuff. So we'll have to get the scoop from the cryptozoologist, Warren.
Speaking of which, he's going to be calling in any time now. We better go to a break. He should be calling in.
Okay, how about in 2 minutes, though?
Well, what else do you have to say?
I wanted to say that Ghostly Talk is aired... Because I didn't say it already.
Okay.
Ghostly Talk.
We're going to get through one segment without this.
No, we can't. Ghostly Talk is aired live on Sunday nights from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Even if we walk in 20 minutes beforehand, and at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern on Pioneer, and Pioneer can be found at pioneer.rolo.net.
Mm-hmm.
Ghostly Talk's website, of course, is www.ghostlytalk.com.
Yeah.
And when we're on the air live, we are in the chat rooms. So you can go to www.ghostlytalk.com if you're a member and click on the text chat link, or go to pioneer.rolo.net and click on the text chat link. So with that, let's go to commercial, and we'll be back hopefully with Lauren Coleman.
I'm Van Zandt West from TrinityScience.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Just when you thought it was safe to get drunk, then say hi to your friends.
Drunken Dialing.com.
Just when you thought it was safe, make that late night booty call.
Drunken Dialing.com.
There's a kangaroo kickboxing in my
body. www.drunkendialing.com.
To be Mothmanlive.com and co-author of Mothman Facts Behind the Legend, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Ghostly Talk, sticking our nose in the world's business.
What happened to your journalistic responsibility?
What do you mean journalistic responsibility? I talk about aliens for crying out loud.
Yeah? And what do you think aliens are?
Why talking about this kind of stuff?
Aliens'
responsibility is usually holding the truth back. I'm trying to bring it back out to people, let them see these things.
There you go.
I think we got one vote on your side, Clyde.
What are you talking about?
Well, you do. A lot of people are on my side, I think.
Well, that's good. That's good.
I was going to get some peace there for a second. I'm like,
know,
this is mellow. We can kind of relax here on a Sunday night and talk about some stuff. No, it just...
and then grind, man.
I started to fall asleep, and then I was rudely awakened by that.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I am Carmel.
And, of course, Will's manning the boards. He's in the chat rooms. Go to pioneer.rolla.net or ghostlytalk.com to get in the chat rooms. Talk about what we're talking about today.
This is a hell of a show we're going to have here.
Oh, gosh, yes. I have 8,000 million questions.
Beyond stoked.
Yeah, we're going to learn from the man. The cryptozoologist, author of Cryptozoologist A to Z, mm-hmm. or Cryptozoology A to Z, Lauren Coleman.
Yeah.
So let's get him on, but you've got to read the intro.
You want me to wreck this one?
Try the intro.
You want me to do radio voice Scott L or just regular Scott L?
Regular Scott L. Yeah, don't put too much pressure on yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Lauren Coleman is one of the world's leading cryptozoologists, an honorary member of the British Columbia Scientific Cryptozoology Club. Well, that's a mouthful. And several other international organizations. He is also a life member of the International Society of Cryptozoology. Starting his field work and investigations in 1960, after traveling and trekking extensively in pursuit of cryptozoological mysteries, Coleman began writing to share his experiences in 1969. Coleman has written 27 books and more than 300 articles.
Oh, that's got to be double by now.
Yeah, I thought my journal was a lot of work. I
mean, you know, he's got not only that. A lot of the articles are picked up by one of our absolute favorite websites, ParanormalNews.com.
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. So he's on there quite often.
Oh, yeah.
All right, try and finish that so that we can get him on.
Yeah. All right. 300 articles. He has appeared frequently on radio and television programs and has lectured throughout North America. As well as in London and at Loch Ness. Neato.
I want to go there.
He has been both. He has been both on and off camera consult. He has been both on and off camera consultant to NBC TV's Unsolved Mysteries, Annie's Ancient Mysteries, History Channel's In Search of History, and Discovery Channel's In the Unknown, and other reality-based programs. He contributes cryptozoology columns on The Trail to the London-based magazine 40 and Times, one of our favorites.
Oh yeah.
And Mysterious World to Fate, as well as regular articles to The Anomalist and Fortean Studies. In 2000, he served as the senior series consultant to the new In Search Of program, which is scheduled for future broadcast on Fox and the USA Network.
That is an old intro, isn't it?
I think we're going to cut it right there. Lauren, okay. Welcome to the show.
Yes, Lauren Coleman, thank you for coming on Ghostly Talk.
Sure, it's great to be in Michigan.
Yes, we're in Michigan. How come I can't hear you in my headphones?
Because the mic was turned off.
Ah, there you are.
There you are, Lauren.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, God, we can hear you totally.
To repeat, an awful, too often seen commercial, right?
Yeah. No, I hate saying that. Like, my phone sucks, right? My phone straight up sucks. I hate my cell phone. But and I always try, because I'm always doing that. I would normally say, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? And now I'm like, hello? Hey. Hi. I don't want to get caught in that stupid phrase.
Yeah, you have to change it to like
well,
now.
Well, they took it from us.
Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah.
But I have to say, getting you on Ghostly Talk. Now, Ghostly Talk, we're ghost hunters, but we deal with all things paranormal as well. And one of the things that we follow is I've followed for a long, long, long time, ever since when I was in junior high. They had these mysterious black cats what's the city now? I've lost it. Manchester, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Manchester, Michigan, Mysterious Black Cats. And since then, I've been, and that was when I was in junior high, so it's many years ago. And ever since then, I've been watching, you know, for articles like that. And since then, of course, a lot has happened.
Oh, yeah.
In cryptozoology. So having you on the show is fantastic, Lauren. Thank you for coming.
Well, you're welcome. Yes, Oakland County, Michigan, I think is well known for a long, long history of Black Panther. I don't know if that's where Manchester is, but I certainly have read through the years and have come and visited Michigan to look into some of that stuff, even visiting the Detroit Zoo in the 1970s.
Well, we had just, 5 or 6 years ago, we had a liger on the loose.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Is that that's a real animal, though, a liger?
Oh, yes. It's a hybrid between a lion and a tiger. So somebody must have let one go or something.
Cooked one up in their lab.
Escapee?
Well, that's the thing. I didn't know.
Was it around the circus when it came through?
Well, that's the thing. I can't think of a liger exhibit here in Michigan.
Was that in Sterling Heights?
The last liger that I heard about were in Japan, and there was one in Salt Lake City. So probably somebody in the media tried to use that word to describe a striped, mountain lion-like animal, and we have reports in my book, Mysterious America. At the back of the book, I have lists of, three centuries of black panthers, striped cats, and things that have been seen in the eastern United States. So probably somebody just decided to call it a liger, but it wasn't really a liger.
Right. That's what I think they did. I think they couldn't identify the animal. But that was right here at Freedom Hill, Scott.
Okay.
And they had the Channel 4 news copter has the heat sensitive equipment,
uh-huh.
And they were scanning right Freedom Hill, which is a popular spot for concerts.
Yeah, right. I was going to say they got a few miscellaneous drunks there.
They probably found them laying in the woods.
What is that running through the woods? Oh, it's a naked guy.
So that hit right home because I really think that they had an unidentifiable cat, mysterious cat.
Yeah.
And they just gave it a name of a liger because I cannot think of a real liger exhibit here in Michigan.
No, there isn't.
There wouldn't be one to let go, is what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rationalization of the press is incredible. I mean, if they, for one thing, they don't like wonders that last much more than 3 days. So if they can't explain it and bury it by then, they'll come up with some reason to move on to a new story.
Mm-hmm.
Labeling it a liger from the very beginning was a way to probably deal with the fact that they didn't know what they had going on.
Well, I don't think that, like you said, I mean, Doug, as far as the liger's concerned, That I didn't even know that was at Freedom Hill.
It was at Freedom Hill.
That's like 5 minutes from here.
Yeah. I can see it if I get on top of the house and look over. I can see the lights from
Freedom
Hill.
That's the suburban area?
Yeah. Suburb of Detroit.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, some of the mountain lion reports from the east obviously follow the green belt, so you get some of those closer to these urban areas. But as far as the Black Panthers and the Bigfoot and creatures like that are much more rural places.
I went to Bragg Road in Houston, or near Houston, Texas, and it's in the thicket, the big thicket, they call it, and it's got reports of Bigfoot. Oh, first of all, if you have more than one Bigfoot, what is it?
Yeah, we need it. Let's get this out of the way right now. We were talking about this in the first segment, Lauren.
It's still Bigfoot.
It's still so.
Oh, Bigfoot is both singular and plural?
Yeah.
Right.
So, as in, I saw a whole herd of Bigfoot come by me.
Right.
So, is in plural. Okay, we got that out of the way. Thank you.
Thank you.
That took less than 30 seconds to discuss. Cause
so, but the Bigfoot sightings have happened there in the thicket. And one of I went specifically to Bragg Road because it's got a ghost light.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Bigfoot have been reported. So I was hoping to run across one or both of those. And I didn't see one. How many reports do you get? Like, have you investigated Bigfoot and found it to be credible, non-credible? What have you found, Lauren?
Oh, yeah. I started out in 1960 with the interest in the Abominable Snowman. And because I was interested in the Abominable Snowman Yeti, it quickly, as soon as I started reading about the Bigfoot, I started, of course, investigating, interviewing people. I've been to every state in the Union except for Alaska, talking to people, and there's obviously lots of reports, some of them, I figure about 80% of the reports that we get in are misidentifications and mistakes and hoaxes, but there's that core 20%. In Michigan, of course, you have the stories from 1965 that I investigated in Monroe, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those areas, Sister Lake, Michigan is another area. 1960, 65, incredible amount of sightings coming from migrant workers and then from local residents of these creatures that tended to be a little bit above 6 feet, 6 feet, 6.5 feet. Certainly credible reports. One, in fact, included a woman in which she was sitting in a car and the Bigfoot came over, reached in, and banged her head against the side of the window, you know, the window. And she showed up the next day being interviewed by the press, and her picture with her black eye was sent around the world. And that's kind of a famous case. So, yes, I find them credible. I think the Bigfoot do exist. There are, you know, lots of evidence, much more than just the footprints and the sightings. There's hair samples. There's fecal material. There's the Patterson film. So, you know, that's why in the year 2000, I got my book, Bigfoot, The True Story of Apes in America, out there because I'd been doing these investigations for so long and I kind of wanted to sit down. And I'd already done the field guide to Bigfoot, Yeti, and other mystery primates of the world in 99, but that was more trying to say people are making a mistake by calling everything a Bigfoot. We need to really look at the different kinds. And then in Bigfoot, I looked at the whole notion that there's maybe eastern subspecies and a western one.
So we're talking about basically a different species of animal, more or less. I mean, as far as all the research you've done, there could be different types. It's like there's different types of people all over the world, different cultures or whatnot.
There's one type of people. It's the Homo sapiens.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's like by skin color.
So there's different races, but I think what we're really looking at is on a species or a genus level, there's many different kinds. The Yeti of the Himalayas, which is more like a rock ape, it has a footprint that has the toe out to the side, is much different than the Bigfoot, for instance, of the Pacific Northwest, that essentially has a foot that looks like your foot, except it's 16 or 22 inches long.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what your foot looks like, but hopefully it's not that big.
No, I can't imagine buying shoes for that.
No.
Yeah.
But the Bigfoot are really much different. They're bipedal, they're upright all the time, and the Yeti go down on all fours. And so people call both of them either, you know, call, before 1958, everything that was seen like that was called a Yeti around the world, or an abominable snowman or a snowman. After 1958 and into the 60s and 70s, Bigfoot, because America really is the media center of the world, everything around the world started being called Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And it really confuses the picture. But getting down to just in North America, if we look at the Bigfoot reports from North America, we see a really different kind of variety, and that's where you get almost to the geographic race or the subspecies level. If you look at the reports from the east, you have a type of Bigfoot that is extremely aggressive, and one of the animals they really, really don't like and they kill quite often are dogs. You get many reports from Missouri, from Michigan, from Minnesota, Indiana, in the Midwest, of these Bigfoot type creatures. I mean, I'll just call them Bigfoot type, in which we hear people who are delivering papers. This happened in Wisconsin in the year 2000. Guy was out delivering papers. All of a sudden, he turns a corner, and here's a Bigfoot over at the side of the road holding in its arm a goat in which there was blood dripping on to hit, you know, the Bigfoot's fur. Report from Missouri of Momo, the first report that was seen by the Harrison family, was of Bigfoot walking through their yard with a dead dog in its arms. So you don't hear that kind of report from the West. Most of the Bigfoot reports from the West are of a very peaceful Bigfoot, almost one that is, you know, you could almost see it as a noble savage or something. And it almost goes overboard in the direction of thinking we have a creature that wants to just kind of pick flowers and eat daisies, whereas in the West, the East, we have a very aggressive one.
Well, now, as far as a dog's concerned, I mean, well, as far as stats are showing right now, they don't like dogs. Well, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, obviously, because a lot of dogs are very territorial, too, and they will bark and growl at you and do all that. I mean, I don't know. I've never seen a Bigfoot or Bigfoot-type animal, but, I mean, a lot of animals, I mean, it's happened a lot of times. I mean, it's in the paper every day. An animal gets scared, it attacks, it kills.
Right, and you have the additional problem in the East, of course, where there's a lot more people, there's a lot more urban areas. So if you see a smaller Bigfoot population, this is just theoretical, you have a smaller Bigfoot population, and when they come into being near human habitation, what's the animal that they're going to meet first? Usually dogs.
Usually dogs, yeah.
This kind of conflict is almost like, salt into wounds, and so you have the possibilities of a lot more dog Bigfoot encounters in the East than you do in the West. Most of the reports and sightings from the West are of hunters, the hikers that are way out in the woods. You know, there are, of course, Grays Harbor.
Lauren?
Yes.
Sorry about that.
We apologize so very much that the phone did disconnect on you.
Yeah, I just thought it was one of those Mothman phenomena things.
we're plagued here by Murphy. As simple as Murphy. He visits the Ghostly Talk Haunted Basement Studios quite often.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, it's happened before. But
thank you so much for calling right back.
It was maybe because I said the word police.
We're out of here.
Yikes. But, yes, we were talking about Bigfoot. I recapped while the disconnect happened just a little bit, and I said that I didn't think I'd want to meet one from here in Michigan where they're more aggressive. Perhaps Northwest would be better.
Like we said before, though, as far as dogs are concerned, I mean, generally a dog, if they're territorial.
Yes, and
I could tell stories in my paper out as a kid where I used to get chased by the same dog every day.
Right.
This dog would not get the point, and I'd kick him in the head every single day, and he'd go, go running away. But every day, he would chase me. I made a practice out of it. 5 days a week, this dog would chase me, because they're very territorial, and they tend to be, I mean, if you don't know the dog, the thing sitting there barking at you, growling at you, it can be kind of scary, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like Lauren said, there is a lot more people on the East Coast here. I wonder if even here on the East Coast, if a person like you or myself were to come in contact with a Bigfoot, if you approached it like, "Hi, hello, how you doing?" I mean, would it be that aggressive?
Like an animal,
a Bigfoot type animal,
a scary animal. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't warn it
slowly and yeah.
Well, that lady got her head bounced off her car window. I would be afraid that it might swat my head off. You know.
Well, that's true.
If
a bear. Are they related to
apes? The humans tend to shoot first. and
yeah,
that's yeah.
True. Want to investigate later.
Are they related more to apes or humans or bears, or do you have any clue based on the different measurements that we have gotten?
Oh, they're a primate. They're obviously an ape, but we, I mentioned in my book Bigfoot, the thing that people forget, of course, is that we are naked apes. We are essentially apes that have culture and language and a soul and religion and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But we shouldn't forget that, you know, gorillas, chimpanzees are not that far from us. I mean,
they're
gorilla,
not.
A chimpanzee only has 3 chromosome difference, you know, 3% difference in DNA.
And they have a personality, too. They obviously have a personality also.
Yeah.
Those, I mean, dogs have personality. You can spot mm-hmm. personality. My mom's gerbil has a personality.
Right.
It squeaks when it's hungry, you know?
So we're probably pretty close.
There's plenty of candidates in the fossil evidence, you know. We have Gigantopithecus. We have Australopithecine robustus, which are these giant human-like creatures that had brow ridges and you know, back in the good old days, they would have been called a missing link or an ape man.
Yeah.
Well, I think what's happening because of the discoveries coming out of Indonesia of these little people, the little hairy people found on Flores Island, we now can consciously understand that humans do not just exist alone, and that's been the fallacy of science. That it's just been humans existing here, and there haven't been other humanoid-type beings in existence at the same time as humans. But there have been. And some of them are called Bigfoot. Some of them are called Orangay Pendek. You know, different names around the world for these ape-like or human-like creatures that coexist with us.
And now, see, the thing is, well, my biggest problem with a Bigfoot-type animal, not I shouldn't say a problem, is that we hear about all these sightings and, I mean, these type things. I mean, or I saw, we hear a story, for example, Lauren, like this gentleman who was delivering papers, for example. He saw this Bigfoot-type creature with a goat in its hand, and there was blood dripping on its fur. And that's a pretty descriptive thing right there. I mean, I saw blood dripping on this Bigfoot's fur. How come after all these years, I mean, you've been studying this for over 40 years now, how come after all these years there hasn't been a definitive sighting where, okay, well, A, we can get proof, or we can get a picture of this thing, a picture of its face, for example, or a picture, I mean, a good detailed picture
yeah,
of this
well,
animal.
There's I expect that. I fully expect now with the proliferation of like, handy cams and, you know, camcorders
yeah.
and digital photography, everybody, you can buy your cell phone now with a camera in it. I really think that as more and more people go out and enjoy nature, and they may run across these things more often than we normally hear about, but because they don't have actual proof, they just keep quiet about it.
Well, this animal seems, I mean...
No, well, let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
I think, first of all, there have been good photographs. There's the Patterson film, and what has happened over the years, you know, once every 5 years, somebody comes up with another debunking of it or trying to dismiss it. It's been analyzed, it's been, you know, computer enhanced, it's been sent to the Russians, the French, you know, it's been looked at frontwards and backwards, and it's not proof enough for people. So we have to throw out the possibility of a photograph being definitive. So then we have fecal samples in which DNA has been taken and it's come back human-like but inconclusive. Well, we know that you won't have a good DNA sample match until you have the body. So until we have a body or a piece of a body or a dart into a live Bigfoot, we won't have the definitive proof.
Well, that's another thing right there, though, too. These animals, I mean, well, these Bigfoot-type creatures, they obviously are alive like we are. It just seems natural to think that they do die. And if they do die, they would be just out there, not moving. And, I mean, by some stroke of luck, or if somebody's out hunting or something like that, they come across the corpse of a Bigfoot-type creature.
Or even a skeleton.
Or a skeleton or something, yeah.
This is another question I answer in the last chapter of my book. If I've, you know, you're right, I've been doing this for 44, 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone all across the country, and one of the questions I always ask wildlife biologists and conservationists and game wardens is, have you ever found the body of a bear or a mountain lion in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Not one has said they have found it. And that's something that it doesn't quite click with people, but if you are a wildlife person or you know the woods, you know that animals don't just die, drop, and then are found. You have a couple things going on. One, most animals, and if you think of Bigfoot as an extremely intelligent primate, they're probably going to hide their bodies, or they're in family groups and with which their bodies are naturally hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a bear or a mountain lion, they die some days and they aren't found. So we know that there's the other thing going on, that sometimes it takes less than 48 hours for an animal who's died in the woods to disappear. They're eaten quite quickly by scavengers. The bones even are eaten by beavers and other rodents. And then, you know, anybody that watches CSI, they know there's all these worms and maggots and stuff too that takes care of every little shred. So that just doesn't wash with me. I'm not surprised we haven't found a dead Bigfoot in the woods. The bear population is probably 10,000 bear for every one Bigfoot, and we haven't found dead bear in the woods. You know, sure, you get, you know, moose and deer and bear hit on the road, and you occasionally find those, but we know there's a lot of bear around, and they aren't even hit that much on roads. And here we're speculating that a Bigfoot's quite intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to avoid man. They're going to avoid getting hit. And if they're hit, they'll try to find some way to hide their bodies. So that's one thing. The other thing is that we do have reports of people killing Bigfoot. But because they're so scared of the Endangered Species Act or that they'll be charged with murder, they don't present the body. You know, even this thought that you'll get $1 million if you shoot a Bigfoot or something. Most people, if they shoot something and then they come up close to it and they found it, their first thought is, oh my God, I'll be charged with murder because this thing's so human-like. I better burn the body. I better bury it. And we've, you know, everything from Black Panthers to reports that people have killed Bigfoot, you know, they hide them. They don't want to present them. They think they're going to just get into more trouble or their whole life will be changed. And because most people that are out there aren't looking for Bigfoot, they aren't, you know, the ones that are saying they've killed them. They're hunters. They're people that are not exactly what you would call a scientist. So it's not surprising that the stories we're hearing from farmers, from hunters, from people that have killed Bigfoot or killed a Black Panther are the type of people that are not interested in getting deeper into either celebrity status or being charged with something.
Yeah, the publicity alone would be, you know, you wouldn't be able to live at peace for very long.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So those are, you know, kind of something just off the top of my head. Thinking about it is that I'm not surprised we haven't found a dead Bigfoot yet. It took 60 years of active hunting in Africa, totally sponsored by zoos and museums, before the first gorilla could be hunted down, killed, and brought back out alive. And if you put the beginning of Bigfoot publicity and sort of the new age of Bigfoot is 1958 when those first tracks were found at Bluff Creek, California.
Mm-hmm.
Just now coming out of the infancy of Bigfoot time. So,
that's true.
You know, I think we're in an MTV culture in which everybody expects everything to happen yesterday.
Yeah.
We're really... you know, this is just the beginning of the exploration of the Bigfoot days.
Awesome.
Wow.
I'll tell you what, we have to take a quick break, and let's do a real short break, because
yeah.
I want to get back to more cryptozoology. So we're going to do a short break, Lauren, just like a minute and a half or 2 minutes, and then we'll come right back, and we're going to talk more about cryptozoology and the
Bigfoot, and all this
Bigfoot recent events, and anything we can talk about,
because
I'm learning so much just by talking with Lauren Coleman. So with that, we'll be right back in just a minute or two.
Hang tight.